You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. Sorry for this low quality recording, but I wanted to shout out to say that East Side Story has over 1,000 downloads within the past month. And that's really, really incredible. So thank you for tuning in. And if you're enjoying what you're listening to, please tell a friend about it or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you have any questions or suggestions or someone that you'd like me to interview, please DM me on Instagram at East Side Story Pod or Chiang Music. Thank you.
This is East Side Story, and I'm your host, Chiang Ung. Each week, I sit down with an Asian or Asian American artist working in the New York theater scene, and I excavate their life story. How they grew up, how they got their start in theater, as well as projects they've worked on and upcoming work that we should anticipate. This week's guest is Eddie Lee. He is currently a swing in Hamilton on Broadway, and has played all 6 male ensemble tracks and also performed in the title role twice. I met Eddie at an audition for The King and I when I first moved to the city. We worked together in 2 workshops for K-pop, and he danced for my music video that mashed up Hozier's Take Me to Church and Spring Awakening's Mama Who Bore Me. Eddie is one of the nicest people in the city, and I wanted to find out how he's been handling his success. And it's been 2 years, and you've covered every single track, every single ensemble track in the show. Mm-hmm. And very recently went on for Hamilton.
Yes.
Twice.
Yes,
second time?
Twice. Yes. Yeah. 2 times now.
And how was that experience? How did you get that experience? How did you, you know, like navigate all of that?
Yes. Crazy things. Because when I was hired, at first I was hired for a leave of absence with Hamilton. It was only supposed to be for... till that December, mm-hmm. So 6 months. But within my first week, I think it was my second day, our stage manager came to me and was like, "Hey, so someone got injured. It's an easier track because there's 6 male ensemble tracks. One is called the Shadow track because I think he's more of a
singer track.
Yeah, a singer mm-hmm. track. But so he had injured his shoulder, and they were like, we're actually thinking like maybe you could learn his part, help with coverage, and like you become a vacation swing in the contractual sense. Mm-hmm. But so they were like, you'd learn this part, and then until you would debut, I was hired as Iker, and then you would continue with that moving forward. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, let me do it. Let me dive in. I like want to learn more about the show if I can. Mm-hmm. So I learned that within a week and debuted in a week. And it's so funny because at the time I was like super stressed about it. I was like, oh my gosh, like let me be like really right, really like let me study and like yeah. do all of this. But now coming back to it, I can like do that without like looking at my notes, and it's like super easy. And I was like, I was super stressed. I'm like glad I learned that first, because yeah. coming back to it later, it'd be like, what am I doing? I'm just like walking. I'm like, I can like wave in the background and like no one will notice. Not that I do that.
you should, and then people should try to spot you.
Yeah, true. That's true. So that kind of started, I think, them looking at me as like a swing. Yeah.
Like you weren't hired as a swing.
Mm-mm, no. Oh. No, not at all. It was just for that leave of absence. But then our dance captain at the time, I then ended up debuting Iker. Actually, sorry.
No, yes, please.
Sorry. Crazy life things, because when I debuted as Man 6, mm-hmm. It was kind of perfect because that was my sister's last year of residency. She was going to be moving to Ohio, mm-hmm. and she didn't know if she was going to be able to make it back for my debut in August as Iker. So we were there. My mom actually flew in for her graduation was that week. The weekend that I debuted, and they like told me like that Thursday, they're like, "Hey, actually, we're gonna put you on for Man 6 this weekend." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's great! Can I get tickets for my mom and my sister?" And so my mom and sister got to see my first show, and it was like not planned, and
yeah.
it happened to be perfect that I like was
story of Eddie Lee's life.
Yes,
everything unplanned.
Everything that's unplanned. Like, don't plan for anything. Everything will happen, whatever. So just like, don't stress.
That's your autobiography. Like your name is there. Like
procrastination
that,
just... is good, but not really.
Procrastinate like, all you want.
All you want.
Everything okay. is unplanned. You will book Hamilton.
Yes. Let's do this. Let's write this. But Yes. So then I ended up going on for Iker. It was about like a month and a half in of that contract. And then our dance captain at the time, Voltaire, the best human ever, also just an incredible dancer. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from him, but he ended up putting in his resignation around that time. And then they came to me and asked if I would want to take a swing spot since that opened up and it was a permanent spot. Mm. Wasn't for just a moment. And so I ended up taking that and started swinging. And it's the first time I've swung a show, and I actually really enjoy it. There's moments of it being stressful, for sure. But I think body-wise, health-wise, like being able to do something different and not the same thing over and over is really important, because overuse injuries can happen. But also, like, I'll be able to have like some days off and like can roll out, take care of my body, and then like do the show. And then it also sometimes feels like a debut all over again when I haven't done a track for like 3-4 months. So then I ended up learning all 6 tracks like probably within the year. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in covering, or just like seeing if I could cover, or like, because at that point I'm never one to put myself out there and ask for things. But I was talking to Jenny Harney, mm-hmm. And just chatting about, I was like, if I'm interested in that, like, what should I let them know, or how do I let them know? And she's like, well, you can just like definitely ask them. Like, the worst they can say is no.
Yeah, exactly.
And at that point, I'm in the same spot, and I was totally fine being a swing. But so then I did. I ended up asking my stage manager, and she was like, oh, yeah, we'll just have to audition you again. Is there a part that you're interested in, or what, like, that you think would be a good fit? And at the time, I was like, well, I think Lawrence Phillip, younger, it's something I think I could do. And so I said that to her, and she was like, okay, great. I'll let casting know, and we'll get back to you. I actually didn't hear for a while, and at that point, I was like, oh, okay, it was a no. That's fine. Like, but then she came back to me, and I remember it being like a shock for me, because she was just like, so we know we have a lot of Lawrence Phillip covers currently. We like don't need that coverage, but what's true across, or what's been true across all companies, is that there's only been 2 Hamilton covers at one time. And when she said that, I was like, wait, what's happening? And she was like, and it was really great, because she was just like, you've been doing like so much stuff outside of our show, like, because I was doing a lot of voiceover stuff that like picked up right along the same time as Hamilton was happening. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I think you have a lot more to offer than we're like letting you showcase, and we'd love for you to like audition for Hamilton, mm-hmm. if you're interested. And I was like, yeah, absolutely, sure. Like, I don't know if I could do it, but might as well, and audition.
And by this time, you already know the show at the back of your hand.
Yeah,
you've done it so many times.
True, true. Although the funny thing is, like, even though the choreography is like 2 words, but it was funny when I was first learning after the fact, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know these. I know like specific words that I do like motions in, but like the in-between stuff like kind of gets like a little muddy. And I was like, do I know this show? after like being in a year and a half.
Yeah.
But so I auditioned and ended up being added as an emergency cover for Hamilton.
Yeah.
And it was a crazy experience. That also, my debut for that was almost exactly 2 years later to my debut as Man 6. My mom had booked her flight to come into New York, and she sent me an email that was like, my flight is on the exact same day that I flew in 2017 for Madonna's graduation and everything. Serendipity all around again.
It's in beautiful. A weird way. I think it's like good things come to good people. Oh, and I really believe that.
Yeah.
And like, I think I've not known you for a super long time. We've known each other.
Yeah.
But like, we've been so sporadic. But yeah, every time we get to work together, we get to chat, we get to meet. Yeah. There's just this energy about you that is just radiant.
Thanks.
And I think everybody can sense that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a beautiful thing.
Thanks.
So congratulations.
Man. Thanks, dude.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I love your journey from coming from Michigan, coming to New York, and doing the damn thing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Right. Thanks.
And I'm very curious as to I know you said, like, as a kid, you didn't feel any prejudice, and then you had, like, kind of, like, a slight awareness of, like, you being Asian in college. Mm-hmm. Like, from college until now, do you think that has played a part in either benefiting your journey or hindered your journey, or it didn't really play a part? Like, what do you think that experience is for you, and how do you think that is different for you, yourself and your peers?
Yeah. In a way, I think it was... Well, one, I think it was kind of beneficial for me because at that point, all I ever thought was I need to improve myself. And I mean, it's a little bit of like blinders, I think, but I would go out to things that probably I wouldn't have been looked at and put myself out there. And I think got some opportunities at first that helped me along the way. I then, talking to like my peers and everything, started learning about actually how much that impacts our community, mm-hmm. of like the lack of representation and of how difficult some people how difficult of a time some people had in the audition room and all of this stuff. So I then started to see it, but it never fully affected me. I don't think it like shook me in the core. I mean, I
why
know.
Why do you think that is? When you're aware of it, but then it didn't really kind of affect you the way.
Because I think if you start seeing it as, oh, people don't want to see me, oh, I don't get these opportunities, you start thinking of it as unfair. And I think when you do that, then you start thinking or seeing other people as enemies or as competition, as someone that's in your way. Mm. And I think that is very dangerous because, one, it's your community, but two, it's also to other communities of like the Black community, the Hispanic, Latinx communities. They're also going through the same thing. But I think it can be so easy to be like, oh, I'm not getting these opportunities, it's unfair to me. And then you don't start kind of branch out to all those other people. Because I think maybe it's that what you say and what other people have said about like my radiant personality is I don't see anyone as an enemy or anything like that. Like I'm very open and like to like kind of put myself out there and meet other people. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think I have that competitive nature in a way. And then I think then you end up getting to learn more from these other communities and other people and like their experiences and then being like, oh, it's the same or oh, this is very similar or then, oh, that's a problem that's, bigger and more in the system than it is like targeted directly at you, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why I think it benefited me in a way. But then I do also sometimes feel like I'm an idiot for not like seeing things that way or like seeing the topic of Miss Saigon and all of that. Cause I remember that was like my first equity show and first time being in it. And like, I could see it, for it's not face value, but like I saw it, I was like, oh, this is like really a beautiful show and everything. But then having conversations with other people that being like, no, it's actually, or it pushes a certain story of like white savior. And it's actually like very detrimental to like what we're trying to fight with now with representation. Mm-hmm. And now I can like see that. Mm-hmm.
And it's not about either or. I think always it's not about like the enemy. It's like, this is wrong. Everything exists on a spectrum. And I always say like, everyone is right.
Yeah,
and if everyone is right, then who is wrong?
I like that. That's good.
It's about like, for example, the Miss Saigon conversation. It's about having the conversation that acknowledges the problems and the issues that are being brought up, but not saying like, oh, this is a terrible production, don't go see the production, blah, blah, blah. Like, have an educated mindset going into the production.
Yeah.
Know what you're seeing, and then have conversation after. Don't just go into the theater, consume the thing, and be like, yay, that was great, I'm standing, I'm, like, clapping, it's great a production, I'm gonna leave.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point of theater, the whole point of art is to engage in conversation with people so people can be more educated.
Yeah.
And if that's... It's for the forward motion of our society, and if that's the case, then I think Miss Saigon can exist, and I think it should exist.
Yeah.
But I think everyone should have a conversation about how it is existing today in 2019. Mm-hmm. Don't shy away from that conversation. Don't pretend that these issues are not issues.
Yeah.
Like, let's just have a civil conversation about it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's, I don't think anyone's trying to, like, attack the integrity of the show. No one's trying to attack the integrity of the production, the skill set of the performers, the designers. Right. I think it's about the content.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is the standard that we're holding a lot of new work up to.
Yeah.
And I think when we examine old shows like Carousel and Oklahoma and all these classics that we all think are classical American musical theater.
Yeah.
They're all very Eurocentric musical theater products. So I don't think it's a bad thing that they exist. I think they've paved the way for the things that are happening today.
Yeah.
But we all just need to, like, have a conversation about that and just don't shy away from it.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think especially with that, the Saigon
controversy.
Yeah, I think that is probably more so because, not that it's not a story that people experienced, but it's that all the stories that we've been told so far is in
centered that, around that narrative.
Yeah. And so it's not saying that it's wrong, but then it's to be like, oh, let's get more of other narratives and other things, which I completely agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. Just so then it's okay that lives there, because then you still have a other whole things, library of other stories to
experience. I mean the problem is right now in our American musical theater canon for Asian people, it's The King and I, Flower Jump Song, Miss Saigon, Pacific Overtures, and Allegiance. Like five I can count with one hand.
Right.
Isn't that a problem?
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think that's part of a bigger system, and I think that's something that the newer generation of writers are trying to tackle, and I think that's
like
beautiful.
You. Yes.
I try.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think and Bombay Dreams, which no one does anymore. That's an Asian show. No one does it.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually know nothing about that show.
Me either. I didn't know that show.
I know. So it's like a limited amount of musical theater canon versus like every time I'm like, I just remember I saw on Facebook the other day, I was like, oh, my high school is going to do an all-white production of Grease. Yay. I mean, and it's like Grease has been always kind of been done by an all-white cast. And it's just like, let's reimagine let's look at what the world looks like today and put that on the stage so that we can all, as a human being, like just as consumers of art, as a nation, as a society, move forward with our conversations about who we are as people.
Yeah.
And I think that's what art strives to do.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I think what one of the greatest things that Hamilton has added is the fact that anyone can play any part. I know that's like in this era right now is a little bit, also could be a little bit in a controversial side, because I think that's ultimately where everyone would like to get to, is that anyone can go in for anything and like use your craft in a sense within reason, because I think if you're doing
if you're doing a show that is set in, you know, in Africa, like you want, if it's very specific to the race, like the color purple or like we get that,
yeah, but like think for stuff like Greece or like
The Little Mermaid.
Yes, absolutely. You should be able to, it should not be a thing that perks your ear up or perks your brain to be like, oh, this person shouldn't be there because of how they look. Like mm-hmm. that, like that's crazy. Especially for The Little Mermaid. Like it's a mermaid. I get like people see in their lens from where they're from, so that makes sense.
It's what they're used to. It's something that people are scared when they don't step outside of their comfort zone, mm-hmm. and it's things that we have been like living with our whole lives. Like mm-hmm. we've always known Ariel to be this pasty white girl with this beautiful red hair, because mm-hmm. that was the image that was gifted to us by Disney, 20, 25, 30 years ago. Almost 30 years ago. And people sometimes aren't willing to step outside of that comfort zone. That mm-hmm. is what they know. Yeah. And that's like, this is what I know and this is what it's supposed to be. You shouldn't change it.
Right.
But just don't forget that the world is bigger than what you know.
Yes.
And we don't know what we don't know.
Hey, absolutely. Look at you, like, dropping these, like, these coins of...
But it's true. Awesome. And I think it's time for us... I keep going back to this because I think conversation is better than confrontation, mm-hmm. and it's always better to have conversation over very, very, very difficult topics to broaden your worldview mm-hmm. wherever you're from. I think there are a lot of things that I personally still don't know, and I'm a very metropolitan person, mm-hmm. and I'm very liberal, but I'm also very traditional, so it's like... I'm like part of the entire spectrum. It's all there. All the information's there. And everyone is right.
Everyone's right.
You are entitled to your belief. If you're a racist bigot, you're entitled to that belief. Yeah. But if you're imposing that belief on someone else, that becomes a problem.
Yes.
Like when we have conversation, we're not trying to push my agenda onto you. I'm just trying to share a different perspective. Whether you want to accept the perspective, that is all on you.
Yes,
that absolutely. Is all on you.
And it's also then when someone's sharing that perspective, it's not an attack mm-hmm. on you. It's like, it's their opinion. Everyone can have their own opinion mm-hmm. and still live and coexist together without a lot of contention.
Yeah,
I mean,
and the problems arise when you try to push your agenda onto other people, then it's like, how do you coexist as people?
Right.
You know, I love that word. I think it's like making sure that we're all living in harmony so that we don't go into World War III, which just seems so impending.
I know. Absolutely.
I know. All right. Before we close out, I have a few questions.
Okay, sure.
Simple, classic questions to round out our time here. If you can tell little Eddie Lee one thing while you were growing up as in elementary school and middle school and high school, what would you tell him?
Oh my gosh. Ooh. Procrastinate. It's okay. You'll be in Hamilton. No.
That's the gold standard.
Right, exactly. I'm really grateful for where I am mm-hmm. in my life and where the people that I had around me. I had great friends, great family, mm-hmm. Great role models. And I do know that that's a very fortunate thing on my part because not everyone has that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I would ever really want to say anything to change it. I think I had, had like some rough times, dark experiences and stuff, but I think it ultimately led me here. And if I didn't have those, I don't know
who you'll be,
who I would be or if I would be here. So I might not even say anything. Might just pat him on the head and keep walking.
That's so beautiful.
Thanks.
That's really beautiful. And my next question is, I mean, I personally think you're very successful. And it's very easy to have other people like judge your own, mm-hmm. Achievements and have opinions on that. But like for yourself, what do you think, how would you determine success and for yourself?
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. We talked a little bit about this, I guess at the beginning, not directly of, being able to say no, or being able to take care of yourself or mental health and mm-hmm. things. Because, well, one, it's interesting because I wouldn't necessarily think of myself as successful. I think I have a very great career, and I'm actually really grateful for it. I know some people that are like always like, "You're famous," and I'm like, "No, I'm not. Stop." I think success shouldn't be from an outside perspective, because I think that ends up putting more pressure on you, which I've actually already been kind of dealing with, between responsibilities to like Hamilton, voiceover stuff, my own career, if I feel like I'm stagnant, because there were some moments where like I'd be like, ooh, maybe I want to do film and TV, and I'm like, this is like the time to do it, but like if I don't get in now, will I miss it? Like, I started kind of getting into my head about that.
Same process again.
Yeah. But that looking at success from an outside perspective, I think causes more damage than now. I was realizing that maybe some of my parts of feeling a little unfulfilled was because I was losing sight of what I want to gain from life, or like I like learning, I like pushing myself, whether it's physically, creatively, all of that stuff, and like being in Hamilton is like a huge gift, especially because it can be like a Phantom or a Chicago that has like job security, which we don't have a lot of in our industry. Mm-hmm. But I think I was getting a bit stagnant, and then feeling not stuck, but feeling like I wasn't growing. Mm-hmm. And then realizing that it was because I was like, oh, I need to be, I'm worried that what if I get injured, or if I'll be too tired to do the show, like being a swinger, don't know if like you'll exactly be on or not. And I was finding myself holding myself back from doing other things outside of it, whether it was meeting with friends because I was so busy, or just taking better care of my body by like going to some classes and all of that. And within like the past couple months, after I did Hamilton, I was like, oh, I need to keep improving myself in different ways, mm-hmm. And not put a cage on me of being like, I can't do this. I think that kind of success of being able to be like, I'm in a good spot right now. I have great people around me. I can enjoy my life, or I don't have to be doing exactly one thing. I can branch off and do a bit of what I want to do sometimes. Mm-hmm. Is good.
Yeah.
And that's probably more successful. So now I would agree with you. I was like, yeah, I am successful, and I'm in a good place, and I feel better mentally, as opposed to being like grindstone, and used to that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know if that fully answered your question.
No, I think that's beautiful. That's a beautiful insight into your definition of success.
Yay.
And the very last question, mm-hmm. before we close out, you get one question to ask me.
Oh,
what would you want to ask?
Shoot. Ooh. I guess I would want to know what your experience is like, because from Singapore,
mm-hmm.
And you were, I know you were here for a little bit with K-pop, but then went back and did, is it Apex? No,
uh-huh.
Apex, for your acapella. And I guess, how are you, since you have performed in both, in two different countries, seeing similarities, differences? What were, did you enjoy one over the other, or what have you gained from those two things that I think have, that you would love for you to take forward, and that like are gems that you're like, this is important to me, or that you enjoy?
This question's so hard.
Sorry.
Actually, in Singapore, I started performing in Singapore at a pretty young age, like since I was 16 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been performing in Singapore for a while.
Wow.
But the thing about Singapore is that Singapore is very interested in the here and now, the pop culture, the right now. So, okay. like, people watch a lot of TV. Mm-hmm. People are very in touch, in tune with the things that are basically pop culture. So, like, we had, like, our American Idol, but, like, Singapore Idol type mm-hmm. of thing. The English version and the Chinese version. We have had a lot of, like, reality TV. People are kind of obsessed with the celebrities in Singapore. Mm-hmm. It's very Asian in terms of, like, chasing the cute boys and the cute girls kind of thing. That kind of culture. And versus America, it's... there is a niche market for storytelling type people. Mm-hmm. So, like, mm-hmm. the Sarah Bareilles, the Jason Mraz.
Yeah.
But not, like, the big Jason Mraz hits, but, like, you know, his other material, like, his mm-hmm. more intimate material.
Yeah.
And... in Singapore, if you wanted to make it big, you really kind of have to do the pop thing. Like, okay. you have to do the indie pop thing. And for me, what I realized as I kept doing more and more music is that that is not something that I gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a very contemporary sound. I have a very yeah. pop sound. But the type of stuff that I like to do, the type of stuff that I like to write and sing... mm-hmm. are very story-based, are cool. very, and that's, even in America, that's very niche, I mm-hmm. think, like musical theater, storytelling-based music, right. Singer-songwriter type stuff. Mm-hmm. But that is something that I, over the years, I realized I've gravitated towards. And so I love what Singapore has given to me in mm-hmm. terms of my growth as an artist, but it's also just a small country, and there's, if only 1% of the population listens to storytelling music, then... only, like, I don't know, a small 80,000 people, if even, right. listens to storytelling music. Versus, like, America, even if it's 1%, that's still a pretty big population that yeah. listens to that. Okay. So I would say, like, it's not... I mean, I'm here in America, and I think the reason... and I had to leave Apex because my mm. projects here were getting really, really time-consuming and really yeah. overwhelming. And I think... it's like knowing that this path is the path that I wanted to go down because I did the tour back in 2016, 2015, mm-hmm. 2016, where I went around the country and, like, told my own story. Mm-hmm. Not in a narcissistic way, but, like, in a way that people related to that I didn't expect them to relate to. Mm. And that's the reason why I'm doing this podcast. That's the reason cool. why I do the work that I do. At least that's what I tell myself.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true. But but I think people benefit from listening to other people's experiences mm-hmm. and their life, and in whatever form that is, in a piece of art, in a piece of drawing, in a song, in a show, whatever medium it is,
yeah.
is an expression of someone's experience. And if mm-hmm. that is the case, I think America... has been more receptive to that. And I certainly wish that my Singapore peers, people who follow me and all that, mm-hmm. I hope they open up to that
yeah.
And open their minds up to that, to just step outside of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Going back to the idea of, like, people are just scared of what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
People are not super exposed to theater because it's not mainstream. Oh, I had this conversation with one of my friend's boyfriends, and uh-huh. and they were like, well, you want something to be mainstream so you can reach the most amount of people. I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also like, are the most amount of people the people that is your target audience? Like oh. the people who are intended, who you intend to share this with?
That's a great insight.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? And,
yeah, yeah.
And if you have... you know, 100 people who really give a shit about what you do,
mm-hmm.
who's to say that is not more important than the millions of people who care for that hot second and then forget about you the next.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's like, wow. let's find the balance between that, yeah, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think I love what Singapore has given me, and I also love what America has to offer, but who knows what the future will bring? Yeah, I don't know.
Something great.
I hope.
I think.
Did you like that episode of East Side Story? If you did, follow us on Instagram at East Side Story Pod and at Chiang Music. Go on to Apple Podcasts, rate us, review us, and don't forget to subscribe. Or if you're a Spotify user, you can also click the follow button. Even better, you can tell someone about the podcast. And the best part, they don't even have to be Asian. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just Ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.